behind its head in one hand while dragging the chopped mess into the dark by the ankle. Sick regarded the town just 100 meters away, lost in sleep, and sighed mightily. The first part was easy, boring even, for one with his skill set. But the next part thrilled the hell out of him. Sick hopped from the gate to the wall and waved toward the four henchmen below. They ran to the gate, tossed off the lumber keeping the wheeled barrier in place, and pushed it out of the way. Pebbles crackled under rubber wheels. Sick waved at the ghostly mouth of the rock cut. The night exploded in a rock band stage of lights. Chapter 37 Gus dreamed of his mountain lodge. He dreamed of Roxanne by his side, sitting in a deck chair right next to his, overlooking the city. She wasn't the Roxanne who had kicked the living shit out of him, however. She was a more docile Roxanne, prompting Gus to wonder, diverting his attention for a moment, if she was stoned. Not that he minded. On that summer day, Roxanne had elected to go with a thin covering of sunscreen, which Gus heartily approved of. They gazed at the cityscape of Annapolis while lines of clouds scrolled southward at speed, which made him wonder if he wasn't stoned. His skin burned in the summertime glare, and he could smell it. Gus scratched at his crotch, covered in beige walking shorts. He shook his Mai Tai, and the ice in his drink jingled. "Left the keys in the truck," he said without reason. Roxanne sat up, her pretty boobs jiggling, not a tan line in sight.
"I'll get them, babe," she said brightly.
She stood, placed her own drink on a small glass table, and immediately walked to the edge of the cliff, which no longer had a guardrail. Gus lurched forward with a warning on his lips, just as Roxanne hopped over the edge, her hair fluttering as gravity slurped her down. "I didn't park there," he moaned and climbed to his feet in annoyance. He meandered to the cliff edge, muttering all the way, Mai Tai in hand, and looked down. A raging mosh pit of zombies besieged the base of the cliff. That didn't perturb Gus in the least. Roxanne had landed right on top of them, her limbs thrown wide as if making an angel in a drift of snow. She smiled up at him, even as they tore her apart in a spectacle of blood. Frowning, Gus downed the last of his drink. He heard shouts from the pool, sounding urgent. He stepped into the open air. Gus woke and sat up straight. The candles around the hall had expired. People moved about, silhouettes on a dark canvas, shouting warnings. A shadow appeared at the foot of his bed. Gus drew his legs back as a solid block nailed him in the face, flipping him off the warm cot and onto the floor. He landed hard on his belly, stayed put because of the shock, and made the mistake of looking up. A boot crunched into the side of his head. The darkness exploded into purple and light. Sleep returned. Gus struggled in a tar of unconsciousness as the world scratched at his back. He realized then he was on his back, while voices screamed in anger over him. A gun fired several times, and Gus cracked open an eye. Not 3 steps away from him stood a tall man dressed in a snowsuit. The snowsuit Gus could understand. The silver face with the punched hole grin took him a moment. The axe was an entirely different matter. "What's happening?" he asked hoarsely.
"Just sit still,"
an unfamiliar woman whispered, guarded and brimming with fright.
"And don't move."
The shiny bastard with the axe regarded him with black-eyed mirth, almost daring Gus to try something. Gus did not, however, and elected to touch his aching jaw instead. Armed soldiers roughly handled men, women, and children to their knees and arranged them into rows. Gus slowly sat up, thanking the lady who'd watched over him. The silver-faced lumberjack towered over them, dawn's light playing over the mask's surface while smoke drifted by.
"Morning."
Gus grimaced and fought through a surge of dizziness. It passed, and he studied the soldiers standing around with fearsome automatic science fiction weaponry. Black masks covered their faces, like the one Collie wore, and for a second Gus wondered if they knew her. Behind a wall of guns rose an awesome three-story dump truck, parked, its headlights blazing. The cab and deck area on the monstrosity had slabs of sheet iron welded or bolted over its more sensitive parts, but the huge tires were at least 15 feet tall. The indistinct shapes of transport trailers idled beyond the flood of light from this apocalyptic siege tower. "Jesus Christ," Gus mumbled as he gazed around, earning what appeared to be a moment's chuckle from the silver-faced axeman. Smoke belched from a pair of houses down near the water. A few more soldiers strutted around them while two others prodded at corpses at their feet. That took Gus a moment to process as the upper curve of the sun broke over a distant ridge of treetops. What happened?
Pig, a voice shouted.
Yeah,
a soldier answered, carrying a rifle with a futuristic optical sight system.
How many you got now? After that little episode, 72.
72.
The speaker came into sight, shaking his head in apparent disgust. Another ski-masked soldier, carrying a subcompact machine gun and dressed in an orange survival suit. Something seemed odd about him, and Gus's brow furrowed with activating his memory.
All right, enough of this shit, the deep-voiced man yelled and gestured at the captives. Anyone else tries to run, not only do we shoot the ass off them, but we shoot one of you. Now then, this is how it's going to work. Whatever life you had here is over. You've just been recruited into a much larger body.
Gasps and sobs of disbelief rippled through the citizens of Pine Cove as the masked man delivered a speech about the life after the apocalypse. He told them about a bunker to the north and the unit of special operators having a gunfight for the ages in a stone courthouse. Gus listened in rapt attention, thinking of Collie and Wallace at times, but also sensing he knew this masked man who talked with his hands while presiding over them.
Sooner or later, someone would have found you, the speaker continued in a bass rumble and holstered his hands on his hips, and would have butchered the whole damn lot of you. You're fortunate we came along when we did. We need you, preferably all of you, but I know from experience that isn't going to happen. First things first, any miners here?
No one moved, simply too stunned in the dawn's growing light. Someone coughed.
No miners? Jesus it. All right, any carpenters or plumbers? Doctors or dentists? Nurses?
A few hands went up and heads turned toward them.
Stand up,
the speaker commanded, and three people complied. The soldiers guarding the lot of them hoisted their weapons and took aim at two women and a man.
Which is it, then?
I was a registered nurse, said a woman in her 30s. Dental assistant, said the other woman.
Pharmacist, said the man.
Well, well, the speaker said, clearly impressed. Bit of a jackpot here, Pick. Get them folks out of there. You're special to us. We like you. You guys get a special deal, a one-time offer, you could say. Anyone else, then?
No one raised their hands.
Anyone with any trade skills? Mechanics, for instance?
Again, no one moved.
No?
Gus looked around, remembering Ray saying something about a mechanic, but whoever it was wasn't budging.
I'm an electrician, one guy called out.
You are now, the man in orange exclaimed. Get out of there!
Two armed riflemen gestured to the electrician and herded him away.
All right, that was the easy part.
The leader sighed and studied the people in the first row.
What I'm offering you all now is citizenship in a new nation. Anyone can join, provided you get past the initiation test. You see, we're looking for survivors. A survivor's survivor, you might say. The kids I see among you, well, they're coming with us regardless. The parents or guardians, well, that's optional.
Allow me to explain.
Gus blinked. Coldness rose and flooded his chest and limbs like a life-threatening allergic reaction. His mouth went dry,
and his mind focused on the speaker as the man rambled on with his horrific selection process. Holy fuck, Gus mouthed and held his jaw as if to steady it. Holy fuck. He knew the identity of the man talking. God above, he knew him. Soldiers moved among the people of Pine Cove, yanking the children away from the parents or relatives. Gus barely registered the activity, even when the kid screamed and kicked. His eyes stayed on the speaker while everyone else watched the kidnappings. One of the soldiers carrying a toolbox approached the speaker. But he wasn't just a speaker anymore. Not to Gus. He was positive of the man's identity, recognizing the mannerisms, the way of speech, and that unmistakable bedrock voice that could hit the kind of low notes that could shake windows in their frames if he sang. He just couldn't believe the guy was there. Gus stood up on shaky feet, drawing the glowing attention of the axeman with the silver face. A few nearby guards turned as well, taking aim with their weapons. Then the people of Pine Cove held their breaths, wondering why the newest member was suddenly wigging out and committing suicide. Children's faces looked on in a heartbreaking mixture of fear, desperation, and hope as they saw him stand. Even the speaker took notice and cocked his head to one side.
You got something to say, son?
Yeah. Gus straightened his back and tried to find the man's eyes.
I know who you are. Christ on a stick, I thought. I thought you were dead.
The speaker's head tweaked again in an oh really kind of way, and the henchman with the toolbox regarded his leader.
Yeah?
The speaker said, his hand tightening about the machine gun hanging from his shoulder.
Well then, introduce yourself, and make it a good one.
Gus's mouth hung open.
Jerry. It's me. Gus. Barry.
The speaker stopped talking as if winded. He released the weapon, his entire posture sagging from one of supreme confidence to heart attack dismay.
Gus? He asked, totally disarmed.
Gus nodded.
I thought you were dead. I thought you were dead.
The pair of men quieted then, staring at each other for seconds before Jerry reached up and pulled the mask from his head. Then, remembering where he was, he glanced around to see his followers watching, waiting for the final reveal. Jerry didn't give it to them, but he waved Gus closer.
Get over here.
As if dreaming, Gus walked toward his brother. Chapter 38. In a smoky haze, Jerry clasped both of Gus's arms and held him there, and both men marveled at each other's scars. Amazement swept over the people witnessing the reunion, and the tension of the attack bled away. Figures moved around the two men, allowing them space, but neither noticed.
Holy shit, Gus said, and embraced his once-dead brother. Holy shit. I can't believe it. I can't believe it.
Jerry reluctantly returned the hug, patting Gus on the back, allowing him to hold on. Gus finally released his brother and cleared his constricted throat.
Sid?
Jerry's face wilted around the eyes.
Sid didn't make it.
Oh. The word almost became a wail. Jerry shooed away the perplexed soldiers and nodded at the guy with the toolbox.
Carry on, Pick, Jerry said. You know the drill. I've got things to attend to. Gus, this way. Follow me.
Gus did as told. To his surprise, the building Jerry was leading him to was the RCMP office. A misshapen lump came into view then, splayed on the ground outside the main entrance, lying on its back. Gus faltered and stepped back, bumping into a wall. He glanced over his shoulder to see the silver-faced axeman standing right there. Gus switched back to the bloody mess on the ground. The body was the town mayor, Ray Minglewood.
He'd been damn near cut in half by a burst of automatic gunfire. Ray's troll-like mop of hair had sopped up a good amount of the blood pooled around him, but there was so much more.
"Jesus Christ," Gus burst out. "That's Ray."
Jerry hesitated in his tracks.
"You know him?" "He was like the fucking mayor."
The silver-faced Goliath chuckled darkly, earning a classic "the fuck so funny" glare from Gus.
"When we moved in here, things got a little crazy," Jerry said with a twinge of regret in his voice, diverting Gus's attention back to him. "Things got a little crazy."
Gus stopped and stared.
"What the hell are you doing, Jer? These are good people, and you're fucking invading them. And what's with that overlord's speech and yanking the children away? What's up with that? You're actually forcing them to join you? You got an insane way of going about things. I mean, Jesus, what happened to just driving up and introducing yourself?"
Jerry regarded his brother stoically for a moment.
"You get burned?
Huh?
Your face is all fucked up."
"Oh, that. Yeah, I had a hard time back in Annapolis there. At a place up on South Mountain there."
"South Mountain?" Jerry blurted and grinned. "That's high country up there. Some rich sons of bitches balcony. You hold up in one of them mansions?"
"Well," Gus shrugged. "Not a mansion exactly, but it might have been a summer home for someone. Had a wall and solar panels and all that."
"Living off the grid,"
Jerry approved.
"Yeah. Well, yeah, something like that."
"Come on in here," Jerry said soothingly, and guided Gus past the dead man at their feet.
"What about—"
"Don't worry about him. Or them," Jerry said, cutting Gus off.
"That guy on the ground there shot first anyway. My boys were defending themselves. Ain't that right, Nolan?"
The ogre at his back thought about it for a second before giving a ponderous nod.
"Easy to do at night," Jerry continued, pulling the outer door open. "Shit's going down. Everyone's all short-circuiting on adrenaline like a pack of squirrels jacked up on speed. Unlucky shit like this is bound to happen every once in a while. Wait for us out there, Nolan. We'll be out in a few minutes."
Nolan lurched to a stop right at the door, his silver face watching. Gus glared back, not feeling particularly friendly, and bumped into a corner of the second security door. Inside, the Spartan office remained untouched, right down to the rack of firearms and ammunition on the west wall. Jerry circled Ray's desk and pulled out a chair. He gestured for Gus to do the same, and both sat down. In the morning light, with the smell of smoke on the air, Jerry leaned back and stared at Gus from the chin up, inspecting him, remembering him. His mouth became a thin line before puckering into a tight button of amazement.
"Should have known you'd pull through. God damn. If there ever was a bastard to kick the apocalypse in the balls and get away with it, it'd be you. God damn."
"You too," Gus said, captivated by the last surviving member of his family.
"Holy shit. Not like you, though," Jerry said with a slow shake of his head. "Not like you. For one, I was up north in deep backcountry, rooting around with pipes and goons and suits, sucking up every last drop of tar sand oil we could sniff out. Took days to drive onto sight, and over some pretty shitty roads, too. We didn't have to worry about zombies up there. Oh, there were one or two guys that turned, but we isolated them pretty fast. And when we found out that they were fucking undead, well, we put a nail in their head, and that was that. Nothing like what you or anyone else in a city or town had to go through. I'm not saying we had it easy. Far fucking from it. Only different."
Gus smiled.
"Good to see you, bro. Good to see you, too.
But," Gus stressed the words, "the fuck are you doing?"
"Feeding the machine," Jerry answered truthfully and stared back, clearly ruminating on how best to deal with the situation. "Feeding the machine," Gus repeated. "By killing folks?"
Yeah, that's right. I didn't forget the fucking corpse on the doorstep. The same guy who was pretty fucking helpful to me a few hours ago. You said your boys. You in charge of this outfit?
I am.
So how is it you've gone about corralling everyone in town who ain't dead and giving them this draft speech, forcing them to join you? What kind of fucked up thought process is that? Jesus Christ, Jer. What would Mom or Dad say?
Jerry snapped forward and bared his teeth.
Hey, you keep them out of this. You keep them out. No one had to make the fucking choices I had to make. No one crossed the lines like I did. Mom and Dad were lucky they went before the zombies, quick and painless. One flash of light and they're gone. They were lucky. The rest of us who lived after the shitbagging of everything, fine. Well, we weren't so lucky. Like I said, lines were crossed, moral compasses stepped on and left in the dirt, all just to get by.
Now it's life.
Gus leaned in, blinking in horror, quickly changing into anger.
What fucking life?
This.
Jerry swept his hands wide.
Bring in dedicated folks like myself into the fold, getting them ready for war. You know what's on the other side of Canada? More like you? Worse than me. There's guys and gals over there who've banded together and pretty much danced naked in their own shit. Yeah, that fucking crazy. Armageddon-level insanity. When law and order went down the shitter like two flush turds heading out to sea, the anarchists came out to play and they came out in force. Then the crazies, then the cannibals. Some of them banded together and made small armies, others made tribes. They got their hands on guns and explosives and either started shooting people or rounding them up. Why people? Because that's the only resource left in the world that's worth a goddamn. People are key to starting over. The more you have, the more power you got. Without them, you're just one shit monkey sitting in his recliner wondering if he should face the morning or exit with a shotgun blast to the head. And if it's not me waking him up, it'll be someone else. Someone a lot less sociable.
Roxanne's voice whispered in Gus's ear then, a soft breath of deadly sweetness, warning him about the West, warning him about what was out there. He couldn't remember her exact words, but her message had been clear enough.
Like surrounding them with guns and yanking the kids away, Gus countered, his tone rising. You could have pulled up and asked for a meeting or something.
Ask for a meeting?
How often did someone fucking ask for a meeting with you? I mean, when you met someone on the road, huh? Folks don't ask for meetings anymore. They fucking blast you first and cattle prod the pieces left over. Maybe they'll wander about you when they're squatting over a hole and taking a dump. That's all after they've fucking looted your ass. That's the world today. Shoot first and talk about dead assholes later. I've done both, and yeah, this way is far and away more preferable. I've got a system down, pretty reliable. The people I need are behind me. Blood brothers who survived up north with me. Seriously, if I had my guys hide out of sight and then approach a group of people all alone, which is a pretty goddamn dangerous proposition to begin with, right? Stupid, too, I might add. But say for argument's sake, I'd do that. What do you think'll happen? 90% of the time. I'm left for dead. That's just all hypothetical, though. Now, say you do listen. And I tell you I'm committed to protecting myself and you, your people, okay? And I know what's out there, what's coming. I tell you everything and make the argument for joining forces. Well, guess what? Sooner or later, there's going to be a disagreement about some shit. There always is. Two clans can't coexist under two leaders, so one will have to assume power. Thing is, a clan is usually pretty loyal to its leader, so the two groups become fragmented once again. Maybe there's debate on how things are done. Then arguments, then fist fights, then knives and guns. See where I'm heading with this? And even if that new bunch of survivors says, no thank you, it's not our concern, well, what do you do? Leave those folks alone?
Just leave that pocket of skills and knowledge for the next not-so-sociable clan to roll into town? I see you're missing some teeth in front there, Gussie. How'd that happen?
Got into a fight.
Life or death, I take it?
Gus paused.
Yeah. You find a dentist to take them teeth out?
No.
And there you go. Now maybe you're in need of a mechanic, and the only one you know happens to be part of another group. You'd really leave that behind?
Gus rattled his head and stared.
Holy shit, Skippy. You jumped some big steps in that logic there.
It doesn't matter, Jerry said. My point is you get them, whether they want to join up or not.
You can't just allow people, skilled labor, to walk. You bring them into the fold, show them how the world works now, and if they don't like it...
Jerry drew a thumb across his throat and stuck out a tongue.
Because the next group will use them against me, and to that I say fuck you. Better me than somebody else.
Gus sat slack-jawed, his head spinning from the warped logic Jerry was spewing.
Are you fucking insane? He finally blurted.
This genuinely perplexed Jerry.
What do you mean?
Gus inhaled and steadied himself.
You can't be killing people just because they won't fucking join up. I'm the lesser of any evil out there. If I don't do it, someone else will, believe me. And they'll do worse. Horror story type shit.
Gus regarded his brother as if a mutated head was sprouting from his shoulder.
Don't look at me that way, Jerry said. There's only one way to make it in this world today, and that's to take it by the nutsack and not let go. Impose your will, control it, and hammer onward. The only way. Anything else? And your meat, waiting to be fed to a machine.
What in God's name happened to you?
Last time I saw you, you were a shovel operator working with Bulg Oil.
Jerry smirked.
You know the difference between God and a shovel operator?
Gus once more shook his head, failing to understand what that had to do with anything.
God doesn't think he's a shovel operator, Jerry chuckled.
The fuck does that mean?
Look, Shovel said and stood.
He stretched his back and smiled brightly.
Let's get out of here. I have a place up north in Ontario being renovated while I'm over here collecting names.
Collecting?
Yeah. So let's head on back, and I guarantee when you see what I have to show, you'll think differently.
Shovel leaned across, gripped Gus by the back of the neck, and pulled him forward to land a kiss on his forehead.
Good to see you, Gussie. Very good to see you.
He didn't so much release him as shove him away, and he strode back to the inner door.
Come on.
Shovel kissed the air as if calling a loyal dog. His head damn near swollen and liquid with dark thoughts, Gus reluctantly followed. He replayed the whole crazy lecture he'd just sat through, wondering if his only remaining brother had gone over a precipice of savagery and crash-landed as a wasteland general or had just gone bug-nuts insane.
Jesus Christ,
Gus thought pensively, walking through the inner door and ignoring Nolan's silver mask. Gus stepped outside the office, stomach and mind churning, suddenly believing he should have tried for a rifle from the wall rack. Sounds of a fight in progress sidetracked his attention. Just ahead, grunting and fighting within a fragmented ring of armed soldiers, the red-headed woman known as Marie slugged another man across the jaw, laying him out on the ground. In the drifting smoke and brightening day, she jumped onto him and raised a hammer. She brought it down as if pounding a crooked nail into a knot of wood, except it wasn't wood she was hitting. Marie buried the tool into her opponent's head, and he ceased struggling, limbs flopping as if drilled by a taser. She ripped the hammer free in a red arc, shrieked, and whacked the skull again, quieting those thrashing arms and legs. She continued hitting the dead man, grunting with every impact. The killing stopped Gus cold in his tracks.
Holy fuck.
Shovel sighed, half-turned, and rolled his eyes with impatience.
"Christ above, I don't want to hear it," he declared, and glanced over his brother's shoulder.
Nolan slapped Gus upside the head with the flat of his axe, dropping him like a laundry bag falling off a moving truck. Chapter 39. A whirlpool of inky blackness sucked Gus down. Voices crackled in that weightless void, right in his ear at times, far away at others. He came close to consciousness, skimming the underbelly, and floated just beneath, aware enough to know that being so close to the surface wasn't a comfortable experience. Forces tugged and jerked on his limbs, some hard enough for Gus to wonder what was that, just before a warm undercurrent enveloped his sense of self, originating from the crook of his elbow, flooding him in a puff of euphoria, sending him spiraling, hands and fingers outstretched, exploring. The darkness lit up with mute explosions of intoxicating purple, pink, and blue, calming him with their serenity, warping into streaks of light as he flew outward, heading for reaches unknown. Sand. He lay upon sand, the earth's heat radiating through his back, shifting and seeping into his weary physical form while luminescent waves soaked the shoreline with a rattle. He glanced right, then left, seeing nothing but beach and heat shimmers. Roxanne stretched out beside him on the left, naked, her skin the color of the sky. This didn't disturb Gus in the least. In fact, seeing the woman delighted him in a subdued kind of way. She smiled twinkling silver teeth at him, and a surreal glow engulfed her head. She pointed, and Gus looked toward an ocean of glittering purple that magically alternated between flat tranquility and gentle ripples, like a plane of velour being smoothed by the invisible hand of God. "Beautiful," Gus said, feeling the heat at his back, the sand working magic into his aching frame, into the very fiber of his spirit. "I feel fucking amazing," he said, the words formulating an elegant cursive smoke before his eyes, curling into nothing, leaving only a curious taste of vanilla and strawberries. The waves rolled, the sky fled and blotted with fireworks that took eternities to blossom. Roxanne scooted a little closer, snuggling into his arm, her chin becoming part of his upper shoulder. The contact made him blink, the action taking a whole year.
"How much of that shit you give him?" Roxanne asked in a voice that sounded like she was gargling a microphone.
But with everything so wonderful, Gus didn't think it weird at all. He went back to watching the sky, his eyes opening to their maximum potential.
"Fuck me," Slick Pick muttered as he studied the opaque shell of Gus's left eyeball.
He released it, and the skin slid over the curvature like a slug, easing into a dreamy slit. Slick Pick pulled back the right eyelid with a rough thumb.
"You used too much this time."
Sick stood silent next to the trailer's wall and shrugged nonchalantly, inspecting the syringe he'd just emptied into the sedated man's arm. Shovel had okayed the first injection 2 hours before, a light dose, just to see how his brother would react to the heroin. Sick didn't do light doses. It was fucking thunderbolts all the way. To his surprise, Gus had reacted just fine, mellowing out like a sleepy cat.
"This cocksucker's never gonna wake up, Shovel," Slick Pick stated, flashing a dirty look in Sick's direction.
"Hey," Shovel said, offended. "That's my blood you're talking about there, so don't call him a cocksucker."
Slick Pick straightened and frowned.
"Sorry, Shovel, meant no disrespect."
"Well, it fucking sounded disrespectful."
"Sorry, bro."
Shovel didn't reply, letting Slick Pick wallow in unease. Sometimes silence was the best way to keep the grunts in line. They stood around Gus, who'd crashed, drugged, on a couch in the designated command trailer Shovel had taken for his own. The narrow quarters contained a plush but worn living room set, bolted down to avoid slippage. A weapon rack for firearms and blades hung beside a desk. The office furniture partitioned off the bedroom section and the double-sized mattress in the rear. Thick quilts lay in a snarl upon the bed. Shovel couldn't give a shit about housekeeping. He stood above his tripping brother and shook his head, pissed at having to drug Gus for the road and aware of the implications.
"So, how long are you going to keep him like this?" Slick Pick asked, mindful of Sick and the intimidating Nolan leaning against a wall.
The big man still hadn't removed his silver helmet, seemingly enjoying the fear he instilled in Slick Pick.
"What do you mean?" Shovel asked back.
"You can't keep him doped up like that."
"Why not?" Shovel regarded his henchman. "You laying claim to the dust now?"
Slick paled and swallowed.
"Course not, Shovel. We got plenty of that. But sooner or later he's gonna come out of it. Now, I'm no shrink, but I saw his face when you came out of that cop shack, and I can tell you he's not with the program. All due respect."
"He's with it. He's my blood. That alone makes him with it."
"He's gotta fight someone."
Shovel's face darkened into a Halloween mask of displeasure.
"I don't like you going on about this, Slick."
"Shovel, I'm only saying. We all follow rules here. Rules you set down to make sure whoever came into the fold was reliable. Dependable. It's like fucking protocol now for all these new bastards. Weed killer for the undesirables, right? And it appears to me this is one case of true colors you'll want to get to the bottom of ASAP. Christ, how many times have you said we can't have anyone around who don't believe in what we're doing? And brother or not, whoever was in the street there this morning saw that Gussie here might have issues."
Six dangerous eyes flicked to gauge Shovel's reaction. The same time Nolan straightened, a golem coming to life, pulling his back an inch away from the wall, offering maximum decisive violence if needed. Shovel didn't summon them, however, and Slick Pick, perspiring and visibly aware of the two killers, pressed on with his argument like a man threading his way through a minefield using a dinner fork.
"If Giovanni were here, he'd say the same thing."
"You shut the fuck up, right there," Shovel warned. "Just fucking shut up. The day you speak for Giovanni is the day I fucking take a drill to your skull. You don't talk for him, got it?"
"I'm just saying, if he were here, he'd say..."
Shovel looked toward Sick, which was enough for Slick Pick to raise his hands in surrender and take a quick step back from the three men.
I got it, he blurted.
Shovel glared at his mouthy henchman.
"Just saying,"
Slick Pick finished in a much lower tone, inspecting the floor of the trailer to avoid Shovel's stare.
"Was all."
Drool threaded from one corner of Gus's mouth, seeping into his patchy beard before descending to his neck. Gus's feebly smiling face stared at the ceiling, stoned eyes as dreamy as fog on a lake, oblivious to the stormy debate. Shovel shook his head again, knowing he was fidgeting on this one and hating himself for it. His brother, presumed long dead but not, had appeared during the largest take of living meat yet. What would Giovanni say to Gus's appearance? Shovel knew that answer without squeezing his brain for juice. He despised it when Slick Pick could point out the obvious.
"How we doing for time here?" Shovel asked, changing the subject.
"Give us another couple of hours or so," Slick Pick cleared his throat. "The boys are having the new recruits load up the other trailer right now. There's a lot to be loaded. These pine holers have prepped for the winter. Cured meats, salt fish, bottled jams, root cellars full of veggies, even fucking garlic."
"Weapons?"
Slick scratched his ear.
"Nothing special there, sorry. But there was a portable generator there, too. All round this fucking shithole turned out to be a plum."
"How many new heads?"
42.
That number impressed Shovel. Pine Cove had given shelter to a sizable number of people. Yet as time and time again had demonstrated, when faced with life or death, the true survivors had no problem emerging from the captured populace.
Some had to be executed straight out, bludgeoned to death just to prove their conquerors were serious. Shovel's men had gunned down two runners who thought they might make the tree line, but after all that, it was down to business. Flaying the fat from the meat took an hour, and the fights were bloody, even by Shovel's standards. In the end, however, 42 new men and women were added to the fold. An additional 6 kids also joined, all under 10 years of age. Shovel loved finding them that young, young enough to fashion into the fighters he needed them to become. He inhaled sharply.
"Where's the next crop?"
"Only one," Slick Pick said. "A back road in Ontario." Shovel chastised himself. He had forgotten the plan with the arrival of his brother. He needed to get thinking straight again, to get back to the game at hand. Strike east and scoop up the residents of Pine Cove first, then pluck the second lot on the way back to base, along with whatever supplies they could find. If they left them, road savages most definitely would not.
Gus.
Who would have known he'd actually survive? Shovel expected he did know, way, way back in that part of his mind where he stored memories of more civilized times. He remembered how if pushed into a corner, Gus would come out swinging. The apocalypse had been a huge corner, and there he was, as glazed and runny as jelly. Shovel studied the stone form on his couch. He knew the same killer instinct flowed through Gus's veins as did through Shovel's. Accessing it correctly, however, was a mystery. "All right," he finally said.
"Sick, you stay here with me. Fix up another shot in case we need it. You other guys get out of here. See that things go smooth. I'll stay here and watch over this one."
A glistening spit bubble appeared on Gus's lips for all of a wet second, then burst.
"Gus."
"Yeah."
"About your place."
"Yeah."
I'm sorry, okay? It's just that I owed Jonathan first. He'd saved my ass from folks. I owed him. If we'd have met before him, I would have thrown in with you, really."
"I get it."
"I mean, really."
No, I understand. Don't worry about it."
I'm sorry about knocking your teeth out."
Gus chuckled, and his whole body pulsed in fine humor.
"That's okay. It was a damn good shot. No idea you could fight like that."
"I'm so sorry."
"Don't worry about it, really. I mean, hell, I shot you."
"You did,"
Roxanne said, not upset in the least.
"Twice."
They laughed, at complete ease with each other, glad to put the incident behind them. The surf rolled in over the sands and retreated with a growl, smoothing the grains and leaving a sheen of fine silk. The water slid in again and touched the bottoms of Gus's bare feet, as warm as a bath.
"This place is paradise."
"You understand why it's illegal,"
Roxanne giggled.
"No, why?"
"Can't have people doing this all day. They'd die eventually."
"They would?"
"Sure would."
"Oh."
Gus found it hard to believe. The water rolled back, composed itself, and advanced once again, touching Roxanne's feet this time and making her squeal softly. She pulled her feet away from the surf.
"I'm glad we had this talk," she whispered in his ear,
as flowering explosions in the sky pirouetted from starry white to pink. Gus lay back and stared, unblinking, drinking in the pillowy hammering of pyrotechnic glory. At times his arm prickled. Tiny tick bites demanded his attention, but then were quickly forgotten in a hot, but not uncomfortably so, rush of euphoric bliss that left him gasping. A blast of liquid gold surged along the blue highway of his cardiovascular system, ripping it up at warp speed, cracking the synapses of his nerve endings like fiery whips.
"So good. So good."
He wondered how or when these bites came along, if a pattern existed, undetected as of yet. As far as he could tell, no sandflies buzzed around, nor any other aggressive insect life. The bites just seemed to happen. However, once, while enchanted by that ever-glowing glitter show above, Gus thought he heard gods speaking, gods who swore an awful lot, which made Gus feel better about his overindulgence in expletives. The gods cussed and turned the air blue with flame, and while their amusing and ironic blasphemy thundered throughout the heavens, Gus believed, no, he was positive, that through the sheer veneer of reality, just beyond those celestial lights far above, shapes moved. A tracery moved just behind the sky, like a fingernail popping up and caressing the thinnest of sheets. They were too indistinct to see clearly what they actually were, but they were there all the same. Gus thought and thought about that revelation, wondering if a connection existed between the mysterious beings lurking in the sky and the bites on his arm. He thought about that for weeks, it seemed, until he came to the conclusion that yes, an association did exist. The beach lurched then. One powerful jolt that left Gus staring at the receding surf and then at the balmy tree line some distance behind him. He'd been drifting, cozying up with Roxanne at, in, his side, watching the scintillating twirls and pops painting the entire sky. The sudden shift ebbed away, and a sunny Gus smacked his lips and smiled, basking in the sand grilling his bare skin. The smile diminished. Roxanne was gone. Brow furrowed, Gus looked around. The beach stretched into infinity on either side of him. Endless. Empty. Unmoving except for the constant stroking of the surf. He shrugged. Nothing to worry about. She'd probably gone back to the fridge for a few beers. Gus smiled at the thought of cold beers on a hot beach. Jesus, was there anything better? He glanced left and right one last time, hoping maybe the beach had servers, so he could put in an order for pizza too, even chicken fingers, if they had them. Someone slapped him. Hard. Gus pushed himself back, shocked at the contact, and felt his bowels come close to letting go as the reality he'd been enjoying up to that point split apart with a clap. A storm god's angry face pushed through the bright lights of the sky and stopped inches from Gus's nose.
"Wake up!" it roared.
Another slap fell across his cheek, hard enough to bruise, and Gus moaned at the contact. The lights bled into an off-white flatness draped in dusty webbing.
"Jesus Christ, he's truly out of it. I swear to fuck, Sick, ease off on that shit. I don't want him comatose. Here, you try. Think I threw out my fucking arm just then."
One of the gods pulled back, replaced by a demonic golem possessing a man's head made of silver. A man, Gus realized. Tall, mean, with a chin as square as a cinder block. He recognized the features. Nolan grabbed Gus by the shoulders and shook him, just rattled him as if the big man were trying to extinguish a flaming piece of paper. Gus's lower jaw clacked against the upper until he clenched it, senseless in this violent cement shaker intent on bursting something internal. Nolan released him and threw him back onto the beach, now a sofa. Jerry stood off to the right while a militarized ninja lurked behind him. Gus put his hands up and squeaked,
"I'm all right. Don't shake me. Don't. I think my balls came off."
That put a satisfied smirk on Nolan's non-metallic face.
"Morning, sunshine," Jerry greeted in that deep, deep voice of his and moved in past the goon. "Feel all right?"
"Not sure. I think so."
"We had to dope you up a bit. Make you more compliant to travel. But that'll all end soon, I promise."
"Dope me up?"
His brother smiled.
Yeah, Zombie Dust 5.0, or just Z5. Half a dozen other names for the shit. Fuck if I know them all. About 2 years ago, we came across a transport trailer coming up from the States loaded down with every fucking illegal drug on the go. Heroin, cocaine, hard and soft O-balls, and plastic 2-liter bottles filled with this zombie shit. Makes a person travel without going anywhere.
You gave me...
drugs? Gus asked weakly, grasping the true nature of the bites on his arm. Just a little, Jerry admitted with a frown. Had to. You were just about to open your trap about shit, and I just didn't have the patience or the time to listen. You feel good now, right? What day is it? Jerry barked a laugh. That's the dust talking. Had to bring you out of it to check on you. A few of my guys became recreational users of Z5. Lost all track of time, besides a couple of other effects I won't get into. Can you stand up?
Gus lay on the couch and stared at Jerry and the rest of the crew present.
Walk?
He considered it, drawing up his legs to stand. Jerry took that as a yes and hauled on Gus's arms until he was on his feet, swaying with a moment's vertigo. Hands steadied him until he didn't need them.
Not my thing, Shovel said. But no denying it's useful at times. One time, Jerry.
Where are we?
Saying his name silenced Shovel as effectively as a slap. A coolness as sharp as a razor slashed the room, and Gus became very aware of the stillness that one question evoked. He'd said something forbidden, crossed a line, and saw it in the questioning frowns directed at his brother. Jerry spoke slowly, clearly.
In the presence of the boys here, you call me Shovel. Remember that.
The tone was not to be argued with, which Gus remembered from a long time back when they were teenagers.
Where are we?
Shovel exhaled and studied Gus with an air of deciding if he could be trusted.
We're just over the Quebec border. Stopped for a day. Had another load to pick up.
Another load of what?
People, Shovel said.
Gus's mouth hung open. A greasy knot of nausea expanded inside of his guts as if a fist had pinched off the southward flow.
People? I don't stutter, man. You heard me. You picked up a load of people. Well?
Shovel scuffed at the floor.
We had another load. It didn't go over as planned. Seems like this time they were waiting for us.
Why are you doing this?
I think we covered this. Me feeding the machine and all. If we don't take them, someone else will. A better question might be, why do they stay? That's one I've given a lot of thought to, because frankly, as bad as we are, as you perceive us to be, after a while, a person realizes we're all that's left.
Gus wasn't sure what he was listening to, so he started for the door. Smiling, Nolan blocked his way, looking down at him with a sympathetic expression.
I need some air, Gus said. Take a breath then, Shovel told him. No, I mean I need fresh air. If I don't, I'm gonna barf all over this place, and right now if one pipe opens, I'm pretty sure they all open. Let him out, Shovel said immediately.
Gus stomped toward the door and slap-pushed it open hard enough to make his palms sting. Sunlight blinded him, but the cold air of the afternoon steadied his rolling gullet. A chair was the only step down to the pavement, always pavement, it seemed, and Gus teetered in the doorway. Faint streamers of black smoke, residual wisps of destruction, rose into the sky over a series of rooftops. The smoke seized his attention. Gus gawked at the billowing trails, took deep breaths, and when he'd seen enough, looked to the right. A second trailer was parked in the lot of a giant strip mall. Intimidating black-masked guards stood in the backs of pickups, automatic weapons held at port arms, eyeing a herd of people sitting on the asphalt. They were too far to see exactly who they were, but he believed he knew.
"Have to let him out," Shovel announced from behind, making Gus jump. "Have to. Let them stretch a bit. We locked them up in the trailer there until transported over. The victors of their individual combats, whatever. It's not uncomfortable. That trailer has sofas and chairs, even bunk beds. Maybe a little cramped, and I sure as hell wouldn't want to be inside if someone cuts the cheese, but hey, they made it through part one. Part two is a little easier. A little longer."
"What's part two?" Gus asked, his mouth gone dry.
"Part two is integration. Comes after about 6 months or so, when all the fight's been bled out. They'll work around camp and such, getting to know folks, seeing that our way is best for all concerned. If they have or had kids, well, they'll see them with our kids, see them getting along. After 6 months, they'll be evaluated and maybe moved on to something a little more interesting. Maybe allowed to carry a weapon."
"You'll give them a gun?" Gus asked in disbelief.
"Fuck no. The fuck you think I am, stupid? Maybe a knife or a bat. No guns. But if all goes well and they can be trusted, sure. In time, why not? The more, adventurous ones might even come along on the next roundup of fresh meat."
Gus looked at the motley collection of dejected heads hanging between shoulders. Some hung lower than others, but a few appeared more than ready to... what? Prove themselves, came to mind.
"You can't do this," Gus whispered,
very much aware of the henchman looming behind Shovel's back.
"Already told you, if I don't, someone else will, someone who'll use them against me. There's no compromise in this day and age. Only you and the ones against you or who will be against you. There's nothing else." "Jesus."
Shovel pulled Gus out of the doorway and confronted him. Shovel's brown, almost black eyes studied his brother's scarred features, searching for truth.
"Gussie, listen now. You listening? Good. That's good. I need to know you're with me on this. That you're on board here. Some of my guys don't think you are. They don't think your heart's in this in the least. I tell them they're wrong. Dead cat wrong. It's in the bloodline, I tell them. But I gotta ask you now, and you gotta answer and look me in the eye when you do. Are you with me here?"
Gus stared back and involuntarily shivered, staring at Jerry in mute horror, seeing nothing of the big brother he remembered from his youth, nothing of the young man who'd left Annapolis for some Albertan oil field along with their brother Sidney, gone to greener pastures. A few memories shot through his mind of days long gone, but none of them stuck. Jerry wasn't Jerry anymore. Jerry had crossed a line, a very personal line, probably not entirely different from the lines Gus had waltzed across, but where Gus had stopped on the precipice of a very frightening drop, Jerry kept right on going. Maybe he'd been forced to keep on going. Gus could understand that, remembering the faces of people he'd had to kill in order to live. Maybe Jerry just accepted it faster, learned to live with it. Or maybe he'd come to like it.
"What the fuck happened to you?" Gus whispered. "You're like a warlord here. Those are prisoners you got sitting on their asses."
Jerry, Shovel, shook his head.
"You didn't see them during their initiation. They aren't prisoners, they're survivors. They understand. And they're all fucking idiots."
Gus firmed up his jaw. The tension ratcheted, and Gus could have sworn that the men behind him would have shot him dead except for the presence of Shovel, who showed no emotion at the insult, not a trace.
"I'm looking at an idiot,"
Shovel finally said in a voice that touched bedrock. It's in the bloodline, Gus countered. Shovel's face hardened.
Yeah.
Chapter 40 Shovel's time for Gus ended then. His men manhandled Gus back into the trailer with barely a struggle. The one called Sick stuck a needle into Gus's arm, and hot ecstasy gushed into that limb, quickly storming his brain. Gus lay back on the sofa, but it had become a cloud, a soft, cushiony one, and the roof was the moon.
Fuck me, Gus thought, mouth open. He understood why the shit was illegal. But that trip turned bad. The creamy ceiling overhead darkened with images of Shovel doing bad things. A black-and-white movie rolled across the heavens, depicting Shovel killing people without provocation, on the sole premise that if they weren't with him, they weren't with anyone. His henchmen stretched and sprouted into centipedes, swallowing the newly dead whole. Gus told them to stop, but they didn't. He swung at them, but they laughed, red lining their picket-fence teeth. In the end, a great black sleep sucked Gus down, mercifully dreamless. And when he opened his eyes, his first thought was, night. Gus lay on the floor of the trailer, wedged between a plush chair and the sofa. He rubbed a cheek and absorbed the absence of light, sensing it as darker, more ominous than before. He sat up with a groan, his mouth feeling as if his last meal had been sawdust. For long minutes, Gus sat there, breathing, contemplating his situation. His strength returned to a point, and his stomach tugged on his chain, alerting him that something needed to drop its way and soon. When was the last time he'd eaten anything? Gus couldn't remember and doubted they'd left anything in the trailer. He stood and fumbled through the furniture. Someone had left a sealed Tupperware dish of cured deer meat and a plastic bottle of water on the desk, and Gus made do with a very late dinner. When he finished, he sat at the desk's edge and just breathed, wondering what he should do. Jerry didn't appear to be listening to reason, and worse, seemed bent on doing things his way. Gus reluctantly concluded that his brother had changed for the worse. So where did that leave him? Motorboating up Shit's Creek, that's where. Gus stood, weathered a rush of wooziness, and studied the blackness of the trailer's interior. He felt around the shadowy desk, stumbling at times, hunting for a lamp or a light switch, anything to help him see. Nothing covered the desk, however, and Gus huffed his impatience. The rear door beckoned, and he lumbered toward it, keeping one hand against a wall. The door had an escape bar, and Gus pushed on it, hearing a click. The door did not open. He tried twice more and put his shoulder into the barrier, grunting at the solid contact. Christ almighty!
Gus rubbed his shoulder. He looked back and swore at his drugged brain. There, at the other end of the trailer, was an opening in the ceiling allowing moonlight inside. He'd missed it completely.
Still fucking stoned here, Gus muttered as he approached the opening, but his bearings were returning quickly.
He stopped at the foot of Jerry's bed and looked up, studying a cracked hatchway. Gus stepped onto the bed, noting the springiness in the mattress, and gazed up through a wire mesh. Arms stretched out for balance, Gus craned his neck one way and then the other, watching, listening, and thinking.
What to do, what to do.
Fuck it, he muttered, hot resentment shooting through his veins instead of that zombie shit, or whatever the hell it was called. He certainly didn't like being kept under house arrest. He reached up and discovered the screen could be slid away. It opened with a few testing shoves and a rattle at which Gus cringed, waiting for a reaction. When none came, he found his fingers touch the outer rim of the hatch.
I'm so not fucking getting out of here, shot through his head as he gently bounced on the mattress.
But then he jumped up and hooked his fingers over the edge. His shoulders screamed at him and he let go, knowing he didn't have the upper body strength to pull himself up and through. He looked around for something more, noting how that section of the trailer was a little brighter than the rear, but he saw only bolted down furniture. The desk. It was made of hardwood. Gus got down from the bed, pausing while space and time swung him for a loop yet again. When gravity established itself once more, he went to the desk and removed the bottom drawer, long and broad but thin. However, it might do the trick and give him that extra foot necessary for escape. Gus placed the drawer underneath the hatch and shook his head, knowing he was going to slip off the hardwood bastard and trampoline his dumbass into a wall where, with his luck, he'd break his goddamn neck. 1 foot shakily stepped on the box, and Gus panted, tongue steadied between his lips. He'd have to step and jump, knowing he had only a split second of opportunity before the drawer toppled and took him with it. Above his head, the open hatchway dared him. Gus jumped, arms stabbing through the opening and going wide. Then he fell back. The edges slammed into his elbows as he dropped. His shoulders shrieked with pain. Gus gasped and scrambled and clawed without coherent thought except to grab for purchase as the hole sucked him back down. His right hand locked onto a metallic knob long enough for his left to grab onto. His feet swung in the air, and for a split second he looked as though he was driving a car. A breath of pain and effort squeaked out of him. With his head and shoulders clear, Gus frantically scanned the roof for something more to grab onto before the trailer pulled him back. There wasn't a damn thing in sight, however. Gus slowly pulled himself free of the hatchway, feeling muscles he'd never known existed lighting up in agony. Creating some slack, he reached beyond his handhold and hooked fingers into an unseen groove. He swore, huffed, and steadied himself, glancing around in wide-eyed determination. The moon shone down on the length of the trailer's roof, revealing a metallic runway. "You sweet," he gasped, and in one mighty effort, he wormed his upper chest free of the hatchway, enough to rest his torso on the roof. Gus wheezed and smiled, tucked his arms splayed out and letting his legs dangle, knowing he was a breath away from freedom. He looked around and spotted the shapes of about 3 other trailers, the motorhomes, and the armored beast of a dump truck with the enormous tires. The box of that machine had a medieval battlement ringing the top, which struck the geek in him as incredibly cool. "All right," he whispered, gathering his second wind. Someone cleared his throat, directly behind him. Panic surged through Gus, and he glanced over his shoulder as a boot heel cracked into the side of his head. The hatchway angrily sucked him down, arms flailing like party streamers. The hardwood drawer took him across the lower back before collapsing. Gus's descent stopped on that springy mattress skewed at an angle. He moaned and didn't see the head high above, framed in a square. Sick waited for a few seconds to make sure the prisoner was breathing, before flicking the lid shut with his boot.
"Tried to get out, eh?"
Gus cracked open.